TCJ Radio International presents Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti. Exactly 10:45 a.m. We are in a place called Morten, M-U-R-T-E-N, or Mora, M-O-R-A-T, in French. Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, and we just heard a bit of sound from Switzerland. This is Bob Zanotti. And Morten is one of the most picturesque, rustic, pleasant little towns that you can possibly visit in this country. It's not far from the Swiss federal capital, Bern, and I'm delighted to welcome Mary Brunichholz, who is actually American by birth, but has lived in Switzerland for many years. How many years exactly, Mary?
Ooh, I think it's 24 years now I've been in Switzerland.
So you're a real long-term resident now.
Oh, I guess so. I think I'm just the perpetual tourist.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is the story here of this clock? Actually, I should say it used to be the clock, or one of the important clocks in town, but it's an old mechanism which was removed, but I don't know the rest of the story.
It happens to be a story about human power versus electricity, and the Swiss being punctual and all wanted to even be more punctual and put an electric clock in the clock tower of the town hall, city hall. And that was in 1944. And so this clock was taken down at the time with little or no regard for history, thrown in a couple of wooden cases on the floor in the attic of the town hall, and was resurrected in the late 1980s.
How old is this thing? I mean, when was it originally built? Do you know?
This clock was originally built in 1816 by a master craftsman, Mr. Borel, in Couvet, which is near Neuchâtel.
Borel is a Neuchâtel name and very famous for watchmaking.
Yes, absolutely.
Artists as well. I think there's a Borel who's an artist in photography and also in watchmaking. And this thing still keeps pretty good time as far as I can see.
It surely does. It's only affected a little bit, of course, by the area, the humidity, the air, but not too bad.
Well, actually, this old town hall clock is built below the ramparts here, and we have to start looking a little bit at the history of Morten. First of all, it's not many people, only 5,000. It's a small town. It's like a big village, really.
It's a small town, but they're very proud to say that they have the title of...
They qualify as a town.
A town, the Stadtli, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And Morten is a very old town, and we say, you might hear me say Morat,
French version
too, because it is a bilingual city. It's a small town,
but majority German, I think.
Majority
isn't it?
German, about two-thirds German speaking, and one.
If you go into a shop here or a restaurant, and you start speaking French, you'll get answered in French.
Absolutely.
It's not unusual
not
at all.
Not at all. Not at all. And it's the historic. If you go back hundreds of years in Morat, you'll still find the same division, basically.
Well, we have to mention that this is part of the canton or state of Fribourg, which is officially bilingual, majority French, but also there is a substantial German-speaking minority toward the Bernese end of the canton, up towards Bern. So that you'll hear both languages here, certainly in a place like this.
You'll hear both languages, but something else maybe you don't know about Morten is that for a 400-year period, the government of Morten was shared by the Canton of Bern and the Canton of Fribourg, and it was switched over.
Bern were old imperialists, weren't they?
Absolutely.
Going back a long way, even
absolutely.
To Vaux and Geneva, they had their finger in every pie.
Absolutely, absolutely. But we can't talk too bad about the Bernois today.
All right, I'm married to one, so I mean, I got to be careful.
Yeah, and we're living so close. But interesting enough, though, that handoff went very smoothly for 400 years. Every 5 years, Bern took care of it, and then every 5 years, Fribourg took care of it. And why it's a part of Fribourg now has to do with the historical significance of the French occupation here.
And also the dialect here is very similar to the Bernese German-Swiss dialect.
Great influence. If you go back if you look at the telephone book with names from Morten today, I'm certain that if you go back into the archives of the city from 400 or 500 years ago, you'll find some of the same names. And these people have been working hand in hand for a very long time, be they from the Freiburg side or the Barron side, and you'll have that language influence. These are people who don't travel too much, but maybe asking for help at those key periods in history, it made them easier to ask and share help later on. I'd just like to show you something in this courtyard real quick.
Let me get around the other side here because I'm right-handed. We do have rain today. In case you hear any droplets, doesn't matter. You can still enjoy the cafes, the restaurants, and wining and dining is very important here. It has a great tradition. People come even out of Bern to eat here because of the famous restaurants.
Not only the restaurants, but the beautiful view while you're eating in the wonderful restaurants.
Yeah, the lake. And we're on the lake of the same name. We have to mention that very quickly. And here we can see the ramparts from, this would be the east side, right?
This is the east side of the wall. And anyway, I'm always fascinated by medieval construction. And I've asked a lot of people to tell me what they think these holes in the wall are. And they're not bullet holes.
They're not bullet holes.
No, no.
Well, if this were Canton Valley in the south and the valsers were involved, it would be holes to allow spirits out of the deceased. But I don't think we're on the right track here now.
But maybe there were a couple deceased putting this thing up. Who knows? But, you know, they had no cranes at the time. And when they were building, a lot was basic tools. And
sort of like wall climbing.
Yes,
you know,
a little bit.
Pitons in there.
Exactly. Like a sort of
scaffolding,
right? So you see the lower blocks don't have any holes in it. But once they got up to a certain level, they put scaffolding in to hold.
Very clever.
To go up to the next line. And something else I want to show you on this wall. I really think it's so neat when they build. And this is also this sandstone that you see. If you can look. Or maybe we need to stand back just a wee bit, and you'll see. If you can look, you'll see Roman numerals carved into some of the rocks. X, III, VII, you see? And so what the mason did, the stone cutter laid out for the mason the blocks like a puzzle, and then they fitted them according to the numbers.
Okay.
You can see that go up.
Well, now, this is done today, a little more sophisticatedly, but it still worked. Simple way to do it.
The first wall, 1238, I think, from the royal house of Savoy, the Duke of Savoy, gave the people the order to protect their town, and he wanted a wall built. Yeah, well, that's a pretty neat thing to say to people, go build a wall, but he gave them some incentive to get it done very quickly. He said, get the wall built, and you have 4 years, we don't pay taxes. So the wall went
up
pretty
quick. That's an incentive.
Yeah.
Politicians do that today, too, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Bringing a new business into town.
There you go.
Give you a tax rebate. There's something else which is very important. It's a landmark of Morton, and that is the so-called Berntor, or the portal of Bern.
You want to take a walk down there?
Yeah, it's on the main street. In fact, there really is only one main street, which is so beautiful. And I think it's the so-called Zeringer architecture.
Yes,
this was von Zeringer, who built a number of towns like Freiburg and Bern, and they all have arcades. It's very charming.
Yes, Zeringen towns are always, there's always a sort of a, I call them a Zeringer trademark, always near a fresh water source. For example, Freiburg, the Sarine River.
And here is the lake
of
Morton.
And here you have the Lake Morton. And then you have another Zeringer town that's also called Freiburg and Breisgau.
In Germany, southern Germany, very similar.
It's also a Zeringer town. And then, of course, you have Bern, the ones you know of. Arcades.
On the Ara River.
On a certain charm. Always fountains in the town for the
great water presence. You're right.
Yeah, always interesting. Great water presence, and where there's water, there's life. Always near a good soil base, so there were a good way to feed the people with grains.
And don't forget, before the Zeringer dynasty, there was also the question of the Romans who were here, and they were very big on spas and water and construction. I mean, the headquarters of the capital of the Roman Switzerland, Aventicum, Avos, is just a few kilometers
away.
The
second largest town outside of Rome of the Roman Empire was Aventicum. More people lived in Aventicum at that time of the Romans, which is a little bit after the birth of Christ, than live there now.
Oh, this is beautiful. What a shame it's raining, but I mean, you can come here on any other day. Tables and chairs out, cobblestone streets here. It's so picturesque. We'll have a picture of it here up on the website as well. How many little cafes, restaurants, and shops are there here? Any idea?
Countless, but I have a book with all of them.
I mean, literally dozens.
Every other door, it seems.
And you know, when we came around the corner just a few moments ago, there was the smell of a bakery. And it was also a confiserie, a pastry shop and bakery.
And we're very spoiled by quite a few.
Really fresh.
Just in front of us, there's two different ones.
Look at that.
Big competitions.
You know, you can walk from one end of the street to the other in probably, I mean, crawling pace would take you maybe 5 minutes. And probably if you're fast about it, you could do the whole thing in two. And yet there's so much on either side of it. It's beautiful. And there's the Bern Tor. There's the Bern portal down there. What is the story? Reminds me a bit of the Zeitglocke, the clock tower in Bern. It's very similar.
You have every reason to say that, and you have a good eye. Because both the Zeitglocke in Bern and the Morton clock on the Bern Tor were built by two brothers called the Ducamont. And this one was built in 1712. And it still works.
Now, still keeping the time.
Yes, it's still keeping the time. Now, this is something, too. When we learn to tell time, you know, in English, we always talk about the big hand being on the 12 and the little hand on the 6. This is the first time I ever saw a clock with hands on it.
Uh-huh.
Because, and so you'll see on this side of the dial.
Really is a hand.
And you have both the hour hand and the minute hand are on this side of the clock. But on the entry to the Bern Tor.
Here come the school kids again. Pardon me. They're having a great time. This must be a place of pilgrimage. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you must have
school
classes here all the time.
Well, school children. Big children our age. Children of all ages.
Driving out to enjoy that beautiful view at one of the fine restaurants down at the lakeside, too. I mean, you have a beautiful little marina down there as well.
We'll have to take a walk down there. It's not only a lovely marina, but a lot of water sports. There's the windsurfers from the Bise Noir that you'll see out on a day like this as well. They don't need sunshine.
Anyway, you were talking about the Bern or the Bern Tor before I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
So, amazing as it is, it's still run by human power.
Mm-hmm. And go and crank it. Somebody does it.
Yes, it's run on a manifold. If you remember the kind of collector cars with
maybe cranks.
Model 2 with the crank, same method. It's a manifold. He has to crank this clock up daily, a couple flights of stairs, a couple ladders, mm-hmm. and the director of the Bern Tor restaurant is in charge of doing this.
Oh, is that that's part of the deal.
I think you can arrange to meet him once when he winds the clock as well, but that's a special...
Or somebody looking for an exotic thing to do on vacation, maybe could arrange with them to crank the clock once or twice.
Yes. You know, some people are train fanatics and other people like clocks.
Yeah. Here's something, too, as you were talking about the water. There's a beautiful fountain here. That thing is old, isn't it?
There's three fountains that provided the drinking water.
Just like Bern, just like Fribourg, as you were saying. Very similar. You find these fountains just in the main road.
This was the fresh water source, the drinking water. There were three.
Still is, right? That's good water, I'm sure.
Still is good water. There's three fountains, one at the entry, one in the middle, and one at the end of the town.
Uh-huh.
You'll see just down here.
And they run all year.
All year.
Summer, winter.
Always beautifully decorated with
geraniums.
Geraniums and all.
Yeah.
I always have a good laugh when I drive through France and it has a special panel that says designated town of flowers, and there's like two geraniums. But here in Switzerland, the flowers are just abundant. And these fountains are still decorated.
And also the old signs you see on some of the old inns, the cafes. These things have been here for generations and centuries, literally.
Yes, and that was an important part of the craftsmen in Switzerland. It was to hang out your shingle,
that's right?
That's right.
Lawyers hang out the shingle.
And this is more or less their shingle. This was a way to identify craftsmen or places of work. There were no billboards, but very ornate, beautiful iron wrought signs. And you can still see some with the original holders and the master confiserie there.
And again, I have to point out these little, not really cubicles, but they're little fenced-in areas outside of these restaurants, which are under the the arcades.
Sort of
and
a
so
terrace,
typical.
Right.
Yeah, a little like a sidewalk cafe, we would say, in a big city. And it's so cozy, and people just sit there for hours. They have a coffee, they have a glass of wine, which reminds me, Vuilly, which is a little, it's a French speaking part, just across the lake, just, I mean, a matter of a few hundred feet practically from here. I believe that's where the only wine in Canton Fribourg grows, and it's called the wine of Vuilly. It's mainly white wine, I think.
Something nice. So you can see those beautiful grapevines, but I know you can't see this on radio, but you still have to see it.
We can describe them.
We'll talk a little bit about it.
And going under the arcade now. Oh, and look at the cellars. Look at the all these big, huge, with iron designs on them. Look at this. Somebody.
Look at the size.
Maybe somebody come out.
Let's see.
Yeah, maybe we'll find somebody coming up to let us in.
But there's one that you could go down in too, I think.
Yeah, there are shops in the cellars very often too,
and there's
wine cellars, of course.
A traditional Fribourg kind of restaurant.
We are practically at the Bern tour, and that is the portal, the Bern portal. Oh, here's the lake in front of us now on a terrace.
Yes.
And a church.
It's an interesting church because. If you go to Geneva, you'll see the statues of Calvin, and there's another fellow standing near him, and his name's Guillaume Farel. Mm-hmm. And in 1530, Guillaume Farel came here, and this was the church he preached from, and that was the wave of Reformation in this area.
You know, the thought that just comes to mind, Mary, is that, you know, you hear this, you can only learn so much in a classroom.
Oh,
travel,
yeah.
I mean, it's the greatest education.
It is.
This is living history here.
It is. And think of all the times you fell asleep in history class. And here you never fall asleep. There's always something going on in those.
Unless you've drunk too much of the local wine, then you fall asleep.
Yeah, it's just the thing. Now, the tribe, the Helvetes, lived in the Vuilly, and you were talking about the wine region.
That's Mont Vuilly over there,
isn't
it?
That's the Mont Vuilly in the mist today.
V-U-L-L-Y.
Yes. Vuilly, if you read it in English, I guess. But that was the tribe that inhabited this area. And again, rich soil for grain crops. We see the grapevines that go all the way almost up to the midpoint of the Mont Vuilly that is our famous wine from this region.
And it's very good. I know there are jokes about it, but they're in very poor taste because the wine is in very good taste.
Good taste, right.
It's an excellent wine,
right.
And especially what we have to mention, Canton Fribourg in this area is, I mean, very famous. It's renowned for fine cheese. And some of your favorite and most famous local dishes involve cheese. And you have your fondue fribourgeois, for example, the way, according to the Fribourg way, and raclette and things like this, or just taking pieces of cheese along with wine and some bread. It's a very simple peasant food.
Very, very simple and very delicious. And don't forget about the fish. Because one of our
filet de perche,
lake perch from our lakes that are served here with the Vuilly wine.
Now the Lake of Morton does connect to the Lake of Neuchâtel, doesn't it?
It does by way of a canal that runs on.
I think I see it over there.
The entry from Sougier,
that
comes out at La Sauge. On the other side of Lake Neuchâtel.
Lake Neuchâtel is big.
Imagine you're in the 1470s. Imagine how high up the water was, because this is what you're seeing are three lakes well defined now, but prior to the 1860s there was water everywhere. It was very marshy land to our right here, which was called the Great Marshland.
Well, I would say, what are we? Maybe about 100 feet above the lake at this point? And what you're saying is that it used to come up much higher than this.
Came up much higher. It was part of a natural defense, too, the water. And in the 1860s, they started this recovery program for land, and they built the canals on both sides here, and a series of other canals between Morton or Morat, Lake Morton or Morat, Lake Neuchâtel, and Lake Bilbien, which is out on the other side.
Yeah, this is called the Lake District because there are three prominent lakes here,
This is it. And that land that's recovered here to our right with that beautiful tree line, beautiful walk, by the way, most wonderful walk. It's called the Chablais.
I can imagine a lot of joggers down there, too, on
this
Sunday.
Oh, not only that, but it's just
walking.
Very beautiful. Wild boar, a lot of deer.
Promenade.
Still. It's a natural reserve now.
Yeah. But on the a lot other, of marshland, I think, over
but
there.
But drained off marshland because of the corrections from the 1860s, as late as 1970 when they finished the last of the corrections. Recovered a lot of land, and so you're not you just don't have the wonderful wine here and our wonderful fish, but in this area, the sea land on this side is where I'd guess about 80 to 90% of all the table vegetables are grown.
Yeah.
You're talking salads, cabbages,
this is the fresh produce that we get from this area.
Yes, and lots of berries. This is the time of year for asparagus. Zuri is the biggest rhubarb producer of Switzerland as well.
It's also a very popular vegetable. It is technically a vegetable, isn't it?
It is.
It's not a fruit.
It is.
But it's cooked up very often with strawberries and made into a sweet, almost like a dessert.
And in another,
very popular.
In another 2 weeks, all the strawberries will be coming out of this area and the raspberries. So
this is late springtime, very early summer when we're talking.
Very rich area. So Helvetes, go back to that tribe, they had a good thing going.
That's where Helvetia comes from.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the
that's
local
CH
people.
On the stand for the CH behind.
Confederation of Helvetia.
Yeah, right.
According
and
to the Romans.
The origin of the name. And of course the Romans were interested in this area. And we have to remember.
I always say the first thing they did when they went anywhere with a new settlement was to plant wine grapes and open a spa.
Yeah,
those are the two big things, top of their list.
Pretty much it. And hail the conquering heroes. And that kind of business. But
Salute Bacchus with a great bacchanal. That was always the kickoff.
I would say go have a look of the story of Divico and Caesar, the conflict between the Helvetes and the Romans. Very, very wonderful but sad story for all these original lake dwellers. But Avenches, which is a stone's throw away,
that
virtually,
was the old Roman capital.
Was the old Roman capital
of
to Helvetia. Our left here.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's a lake steamer too. You can take rides on the lake. All three of the lakes, of
you
course.
You can go on all three of the lakes. That boat is called Fribourg.
Oh,
by the way,
what a surprise!
What a name, huh? One of the boats is called Vrie. And yes, you can.
And
visit.
There must be a Morton or Morau somewhere.
You can cross the. You can. There is, and you can cross the lake on the boat, or you can visit all three.
Yeah, you
lakes.
Can spend a whole day on all three lakes.
Yeah, or two or three.
Or get on, for example, in Biel or Bienne, and then come over here, and then go to Neuchâtel. I mean, it's incredible.
Stay a week.
You know, we're coming to the end here, Mary, but I have to just marvel. I've been turning around in circles at 360 degrees, literally, and this is not just saying it. This is one of the great things about Switzerland. When I say you can look in any direction and it's beautiful, it literally is beautiful. You don't know where to focus. It's just so beautiful. If we look to the south, we see those beautiful old buildings. We see the tower of the, I believe that's the
City Hall,
right? And then to our right here to the west, we're looking at the lakes, and then we can look at the old town, the old church, every direction. But we do want to talk about the Battle of Morton, though, finally, and get that chronologically set, exactly what happened.
A short and a long story.
It'll have to be the short version today.
Short version is that Charles the Bold came into this region in early June 1476. And his encampment was on
a rainy day, like today.
Well, it was a rainy period, but lots of sun, too. But he was camped out on the hillside, on the other side of the rampart walls, since about the second week of June. And you can imagine the beautiful white tents with the flags flying, and him as a director, almost, sending his people all around the town. And they were trying to breach the wall of the town. Adrian von Bubenberg inside with only 2,000 people trying to defend the town.
And pass the back of the church?
Yeah, and see this side of the wall where a breach was, where Charles the Bold men were trying to make a breach in the wall. And you'll see the three catapult balls here. The Swiss and
oh,
all
yeah, I see. They're not decorations.
No,
they were actually
yes.
The balls that stuck in the facade.
Swiss and all their practicality said, well, two things. We can leave it there because bricks we don't have many of. And just put
here comes one of
the
boats. The boat putting in.
Okay. There's the boat. And
isn't
as a reminder...
Isn't that funny? I thought that was a pure decoration.
No. It's a reminder of the defense. So imagine ladders, crossbows, an incredible attack going on, 2,000 men inside trying to keep 20,000 men away from the town, and this encampment on the hillside on the other side of the ramparts where Charles the Bold had his men. And fortunately, Adrian von Bubenberg was able to send out very fast runners again to different parts of Switzerland, also as
far as
to bring help. Mm-hmm. And people did come to help.
And the Bernese came, among others.
Bernese came, some people from southern Germany came.
Well, that was a long run.
Different people came from different places, and they stood in hiding in the woods about 10 kilometers from here in Ulmitz. Now, you have to remember that the forests were very, very thick and deep. Now, Charles the Bold's spies could see that there were some people, but they said, well, it's not so many. And I like to think, too, about why they were able to surprise them on the 22nd of June, because if we think the 21st of June traditionally was still Midsummer's Night, he probably said, well, yes, you've been fighting, you've earned some R&R. And in fact, they were on R&R the evening of the 21st. And they were down on close to the lake on that side. And the signal came, the people in hiding who came to defend the town and help against this battle received their signal. They began moving in at 11 o'clock in the morning on the site of Charles the Bold. And by 6 o'clock that evening, the battle was over. And the remaining men standing were forced into the lake to their death. Now, how many people knew how to swim then?
Yeah,
and with armor and all, yeah, you know, you just...
You weren't going to stay afloat very long like that. I heard that there were bones even washing up at the lakeshore here years and years afterwards. So goes the story.
So goes the story, but that's part of the legend. But again, we don't know what everybody did with their dead, if they even always buried them. Just threw them in the water.
Well, we'll leave that to the annals of history and the depths of history. Today, it's a much more peaceful place, and certainly as beautiful today as it ever was, maybe even more so. And touches of civilization in modern times with beautiful sailboats and light boats down there in the marina. And again, we're talking about Morten, M-U-R-T-E-N, or Mora, M-O-R-A-T, in Canton Fribourg, not far from Bern, the Swiss federal capital, by car or by train. It's nothing much more than about 40 minutes or something like that. Certainly half an hour from Bern, even less by car. And you just, it's like going back into history here.
It is. It's one of the only intact walled-in cities that you'll find in Europe.
And you eat well, you can sit and look out and enjoy this marvelous view here while eating some of the finest food in this entire area, fresh vegetables. There's the lake perch, as we talked about, a wine from just across the lake at Vuilly. I mean, this is literally a piece of paradise. You don't have to promote the area very much because it promotes itself so naturally.
It sure does.
Mary Brunich-Holtz, from originally Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in the United States.
Yes.
Living here for many years and obviously enjoying it. Never gets enough of telling the story of Morten and about its beauties. Thank you so much for being with us on Switzerland in Sound. And I hope wherever you are, you'll have a chance to come to Morten and enjoy its beauties and, of course, the rest of Switzerland. From Morten, or Mora, in Canton Fribourg, not far from the Swiss federal capital Bern, on the lake of Morten, for Switzerland in Sound, this is Bob Zanotti.
You were just listening to Switzerland in Sound with Bob Zanotti. For more information, go to www.switzerlandinsound.com.